friends. Okay, here we go. It is the 6th of July, Friday morning. We are recovering slowly but surely from a post-July the 4th stupor. And what a week it's been. But before we get to everything that's going on and my cutting-edge analysis, permit me for a brief personal detour here. We're happy that besides Dr. Audio here at the controls, producer Robbie is back. I want to extend our Sam Nation condolences here to Robbie and his entire family. Robbie's mother passed away on Saturday, and I wanted to share a few thoughts about this. Because obviously the passing of a parent, for those of you who have experienced it, you know it's really an indescribable thing. As a child, you grow up and you think your parents are going to be around forever. You think they're always going to be there for you because for most of us who grew up in happy homes, our parents have been there for us, always. And I've known Robbie for a long time, and I've mentioned this before, and I'm not always proud of this, but, over 20 years. Somehow, we've put up with each other. And even though we've had our times of separation, Robbie most wisely went and served his country, and as you may have known, he's served a time in Afghanistan and abroad. We've always remained friends and remained close, and I've observed as a outside insider Robbie's family life, and I remember. I remember as a kid, I would go over, come to Robbie's house and go over. The one thing I have to say, Robbie, about your mom is she's probably the kindest person I have ever met. Now, people say this. People say that, so-and-so is so kind and so nice. And most of the time, it's just a candy-ass sentiment. Not real. But Robbie, your mom is the kindest, most sincere-hearted person I have ever known. And, for a number of years, I'm going to tell you a little bit here about Robbie, get him embarrassed. Robbie was, from my perspective, I'm not saying I was on the rails myself, on a classic, 4-year school path. I wasn't, I did some off-roading myself, but Robbie off-roaded for a while, which is probably why now he drives a Jeep. But Robbie off-roaded in the path of life. And for, I would even say, and there's times when he was a little bit lost, and I'd be over at his house and his mom had nothing but love for him at all times. And I remember back then I thought, gosh, okay, I'm admitting this now, but I remember back then, I go, gosh, because my mom, and I love my mother, but, if I there was times in my life when my mom was literally kicking my money around the house, making sure I'd get things done. And I thought, maybe Robbie needs some tough love and not just this really just angelic mother that is so kind to him at all times. But I have to tell you now, the fruits of your parenting labor show up years down the road. And I look at Robbie, first of all, as one of the great friends in my life, a truly outstanding human being. Robbie has character. He has class. He's brilliant. This show, for example, wouldn't be what it is without Robbie. And Robbie is 100% the product of two amazing parents. And what his mom has done for him is nothing short of amazing. And it's not just Robbie. He's got brothers and sisters, and they're all incredible people in their own right. And even more telling, my grandfather years ago would always tell me, said, Sam, you really don't know how good of a job you've done or how bad of a job you've done as a parent until your kids have kids. And it's how those kids are being raised that really is the sort of the true fruit of your parenting ability and talents. And Robbie's nieces and nephews are incredible and bright and fun. And just look, that is where, you know, the rubber meets the road. And Robbie, we're pulling for you, and we know this is a difficult time, and we love you, and we will miss Buffy very much. She is and was an incredible person. So glad to have you back, and thank you for coming in and doing this lousy show when I'm sure it's the last thing that you'd want to do. So thank you and love you. All right. You know who's speaking of people dealing with grief. It's really bad being a Democrat right now. I have to tell you, now just backing up, because this is all in the context of these 4th of July stories. You've heard them. All week we've had a little bit of a focus on the 4th of July holiday and what does it mean to be American? What does it mean to be patriotic? What does it mean to be proud of your country? And we have all these, you know, I don't know, spotlights placed on a number of people out there who are absolutely despondent over their country and what their country is doing vis-a-vis the Trump presidency. Now, here is, I'll set it up this way, because, you know, after Gallup did the poll where there's a record low number of people who are extremely proud of their country, CNN did some intrepid journalistic work and went on to the street to ask a series of people. There's mostly women. They asked mostly women in this clip. I think one man. They've got one man in the clip. Asking them if they would consider themselves extremely, extremely proud to be American. Now, listen to these responses, because this is what I've got. I've got a few observations to make about this. But listen closely first to the interviews.
Would you call yourself extremely proud to be an American?
Not at the moment. I'm sorry.
I think I could be prouder to be an American.
100% patriotic.
I would say I'm embarrassed to be an American right now.
And you're a proud citizen.
A super proud citizen.
Those who admit to a slide in their pride tend to blame a president who has wrapped himself in the flag.
I'd be extremely if Trump wasn't president.
It's a shame. It's disgusting.
I'm going to put you in the... not at all proud to be an American.
Not at all. If I had an opportunity, I would get the hell out of this country. Excuse my French.
If I had an opportunity, I would get the hell out of this bleeping country. Excuse my French. Close quote. That is the last woman in this interview. What do you make of this, friends? My observation from the very get-go of this Trump resistance movement was that when Obama was elected and you had a Tea Party movement, for example, opposing the Obama presidency, these were people who were self-described patriots who loved this country who just were opposing a president. The fact that Obama was president didn't shatter, I mean, certainly not from my acquaintances, and I know a lot of people who did not like Obama. I'll go as far as to say I know a lot of people who hated him. And none of those people, and you know this rings true for you, I'm sure, but none of those people hated the country or wanted to piss on the flag because Obama was president. And so it's really fascinating to me the intersection of culture and politics here. Because for Democrats, for liberals especially, politics is culture. For them, you know, ideology comes above all else. It transcends borders. It transcends, you know, citizenship or national identity. This is why you have now any mention of wanting to maintain our sovereign borders by Trump or the Republicans, any mention of patriotism or anything like. I mean, the first words out of, you know, the opposition's mouth is that they're Nazis, that this is National Socialism. But I think the more interesting thing here is that you've got this national holiday, right? You have a 4th of July, and I, This is the time when you put down, you lay down your politics. You go to a barbecue and you have a damn good time. That's what you do. This is not the time to go and make a political case against the president. There is an article. I couldn't stop laughing when I read this. This was in Vice Media. Vice Media, of course, being an absolutely garbage new media publication, very left-wing. And this article details what one should do if they are woke, if they're left-wing, aware of all the wrongs, trials, tribulations by the oppressed in this country, how they should celebrate the holiday. This came out on the 4th of July. I have to read this to you. In selections. Don't worry, I'm not going to read the whole thing. Since Trump's election, quote, the qualities that make America particularly bad, racism, sexism, homophobia, the institutionalized manifestations of each of these have been emboldened, forcing many people to reckon with the ugly reality of their beloved U.S. of A. This is the problem with the left. They inherently believe that America is flawed. They inherently believe, they believe that the things that are wrong out there, and I'm not saying there are things that aren't wrong, are what America is, present tense and as part of its identity. Racism, for example, America is racist, right? This is the same way as guns kill people, right? SUVs run over innocent lives on crosswalks. The carriers, the perpetuators, if you will, of bad acts are human beings. And the left always wants to dehumanize this, right? The person is not responsible for their actions. It is part of some general identity, some general idea, or some construct out there that is larger than one's own sense of self and one's own ability to make their own rational decisions. And this actually, a lot of what's going on right now politically, I look at and I see more than ever before the left wanting to take away responsibility for our actions, responsibility for our own ability to be kind to one another. You have liberals. What is the kid that was assaulted because he was wearing a Trump hat? I'm sure that happens every day. It made national news on the 4th of July. But if you pull the left and ask them, is it okay to start yelling at a stranger if they're wearing a Trump hat? They probably would all tell you, yeah. There'd be a large number of responses that say it's perfectly permissible to abuse somebody who is a supporter of Trump's, because supporting Trump is so vile that it rises above any requirements of human decency. Now, you know that's true. If you live in L.A., you heavens knows, well, you don't have a Trump bumper sticker on your car. What would happen? You get vandalized lickety split. So you know this is true. It rings true. But what's the flip side of this? These are the same people that demand that we be sensitive about every little thing. This country's racist. This country is bigoted. This country is sexist. And it is interesting. It's fascinating. It's obviously hypocritical that the people that demand the greatest tolerance and are holding our country to such a high standards are themselves perpetrators of some of the grossest abuses of human decency I have seen in my adult lifetime. I don't like it anymore. And we, as a nation, if we're going to have a discussion on this 4th of July, shouldn't tolerate this. This woman that says, if I had an opportunity, I'd get the hell out of this bleeping country, excuse my French. Well, why doesn't she go? But get out of here. You know, we're not North Korea. We do allow our citizens to leave. You can leave. You can emigrate. If I could. My parents grew up in a country that did not allow you to emigrate. You could not travel abroad without getting permission from the government. You were essentially in a prison within your own borders. If I can, the irony of it, if I can. You can, lady, you can, because this is a great free country that gives you tremendous liberties that many people who are alive today, let alone in history, do not enjoy. So when I come back, I've got to read you, since America is so racist, and since we tolerate homophobia and incarceration of everybody, and male supremacy is exactly what we're made of. And these are direct quotes, by the way, from this Vice article. The article then suggests some ways that you ought to celebrate the 4th of July holiday. I'm going to read you some of these highlights. You're going to laugh your money's off. Sam Rogowski, back after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem, and Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
I stand corrected. Robbie does not have a nephew. But he can borrow. You can borrow Daniel anytime you want. I know Daniel would willingly go pretty much anywhere you and your family are. Loves you to death. So yes, we can come up with a child sharing agreement. Okay. It's a great point. When conservatives protest, what do? They wave the flag. Remember the Tea Party? When the Tea Party protests were happening, and you had CNN and MSNBC covering them, going, these radical far-right groups. And they're all out there, this mom-and-pop people waving American flags dressed in red, white, and blue. They were singing God Bless America, having a Pledge of Allegiance at their rallies. And liberals, when they protest, they burn the flag. And it's because, look, the dirty secret here is that liberals hate this country. And it comes out especially when there's a president like Donald Trump in the White House. Because Trump is not afraid to wrap himself in the flag, quite literally at times. But he's not afraid to be proud of this country and to push our mighty country out onto the world stage in a way that liberals are very uncomfortable with. They liked the Obama apology tour. But I hate to break it to you, liberals. You know, it was not the Obama apology style approach that won World War II. OK, for example. It was a big, bold America that stood on the side of right. Now, if you do think this country is racist, according to Vice Media, absolutely garbage publication, online news, quote unquote, news source. They made a list of how to celebrate the 4th of July. This is so good. Okay. Okay, this is a good one. As you shop for food and party supplies, you know, to you and me, that's hot dogs and hamburgers. Try buying from businesses owned and operated by indigenous people or other communities who face systematic disadvantages in the U.S. Oh, yeah? Welcome to my barbecue. I brought some cornmeal. I bought it at the Indian Trading Post. Are you kidding me? What? Okay, consider. Okay, set up activities that are rooted in helping a person or community of your choice, like writing letters to children who've been separated from their parents at our border. What if these kids can't read? What is this? Hold a reading. Oh, this would be popular. You know, I know you. I don't know what kind of parties you hosted on Wednesday. Most parties I know of all consisted of drinking beer and looking at fireworks and eating carcinogenic food. But no, according to Vice Media, quote, hold a reading of poems and stories written by people who suffered hardships due to American policies, customs, and or agencies. Let's read some pedophile poetry. Yeah, why don't you just, I'm sure there's some nice handy printouts from the NAMBLA website you could bring to your 4th of July party while eating hot dogs. Next, and this is great, reach out to your local mosque, Black Lives Matter chapter, or LGBTQ center to see if and how they can use your help in organizing or celebrating this 4th of July. I'm going to get into so much trouble. Yes, invite a terrorist, by all means. It's a great thing. They'll bring their own fireworks. Number 10, if you're planning a get-together, look at your guest list. If it's, I'm going to insert a word, too homogenous, or homogeneous, depending on what part of the country you're from. If it's too homogenous in race, gender, and or sexuality, question why and think about who else you can reach out to without tokenizing them. yeah, because that's the liberal dilemma, isn't it? You're on one hand, you're supposed to obsess about the diversity of your guest list, but then on the other hand, you can't be picking out token gay people and token blacks and, you know, Hispanics or whatnot just to make your party more diverse. You know, I understand why libs are so depressed. I would be depressed totally. There is not enough Prozac in this country to cure this type of insanity. You go, just drive yourself nuts. I went to a 4th of July party hosted by the president of the Lion Air Museum. So there were nothing but a bunch of World War II. There's some docents there and people from the Korean War and Vietnam. No, very homogenous for the most part. But I guess maybe I should ask people next time I'm hosting a party what their sexuality is. Just a simple questionnaire so I know if my get-together is not too homogenous. All right, Sam Rejofsky, do a legal segment up next. Our Friday legal segment coming right up. Don't go anywhere. Back after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Breaking rocks in a hot sun. I'm on the law in a low one.
Hear ye, Sam Majowski. Sam Nation presiding in the court, calling it to order here. As you know, there's a vacancy on the Supreme Court opened up by the now retiring Justice Kennedy. The libs are writhing around like salted snails. And I am delighting in this madness. Now, they're frantic. You have to understand. Kennedy, swing vote, kind of one of these people on the court who did not prove to be as reliably consistent as other justices named by Republican presidents such as Scalia and Justice Roberts. So what you have is Kennedy is going out, and the fear that the left has is that the person who comes in is going to be far more in the mold of an Alito, of a Gorsuch, and even of a Roberts. And they don't like this. But we, of course, we love it. We're very excited about it. So now creative legal theories are popping up as to how Trump might get rooster blocked on this thing. Okay? MSNBC is debating this Hail Mary on Thursday. Velshi's talking to former assistant U.S. attorney, NBC legal analyst Mimi Rocha, and this is their exchange.
I have dozens of tweets from people who are saying this president should not, being under investigation, even be in a position to nominate a judge at all. There are some people, legal and ethical scholars, who have chimed in on that and said, Maybe that's true.
Look, I agree with that. He should not get to nominate someone until this investigation is done. That's the Cory Booker view, as far as I can tell. I think that even under the McConnell rule, you know, he called Obama a, quote, lame duck president, and that's why he didn't get to nominate someone in his view. Well, I think someone who, again, is facing a credible possibility of impeachment, is under serious criminal investigation, is not, you know, it could be also considered a lame duck president.
Well, this is hilarious to me. Hilarious. Can we talk Bob Menendez here for a minute? You guys know who Bob is? U.S. Senator. Up on federal racketeering charges brought by a Democratic U.S. Attorney. Arrested. We're talking handcuffs, right? Handcuffs, arrested, charges, went to trial, later exonerated. He sat in the Senate the entire time that he was up on charges. And do you know why? Because we have this thing called, hold on, MSNBC, I want to make sure you're listening very carefully. Presumption of innocence. Yes, that's still something that as a legal concept means something in this country. So, yeah, so Menendez is voting on important things, you know, shooting down things like efforts to press forward on the elimination of Obamacare. And I'm fairly certain that MSNBC was not rushing in to do legal gymnastics to figure out how he might be precluded from making such votes. So this is a non-starter. If you hear this anywhere, know that you listened to my words here, and I told you this is not going to happen. And incidentally, there's no special rule here or special precedent because Trump is president. This is the same idea as a teacher, for example, who does something wrong, and the investigation having to run its course. There are procedures and protocols for this. And the only way, by the way, a president can be brought up on charges, there's only one means of doing this, and it's articles of impeachment put forward by the House and then a vote in the Senate, where the Senate is essentially the jury. That's how this works. Yeah, it's like nobody argued that Bill Clinton, when he got impeached but not convicted, right, in that period of time when he actually had charges against him, that he not be president, that he stop effectively acting as president. I am nearly certain that NBC, MSNBC, and the left were not advocating for that position. This is partisan hackery, and it would be partisan if the Republicans were saying this about a Democrat, and it's certainly partisan now. This is a non-starter. So you've heard it here. This is how it works. Trump can make this nomination. There's nothing that can stop it. And all this is, really, all this is fear. It's fear. This is like daylight on a vampire. The Democrats are freaking out. They're schwitzing because they know the court is now falling into reasonable hands. Sam Rogowski, and this is The Word, back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rogowski, making radio great again. Welcome to the podcast. We are here on Sam Nation Radio and having a lot of fun. You know, I think the most interesting thing to me about the punditry, the left-wing punditry, both, I guess, the political commentators, the news media folks, and also, of course, elected politicians, is how they are framing justices such as Gorsuch, Alito, Clarence Thomas, and the like. And they're framing them using the word extremist. Now, here is Senator Ben Cardin, Democrat, Maryland, talking about how the nominee list is made up of extremists. Listen to this.
Clearly, the president is looking at a list prepared by an extreme group that has an agenda that really wants to just ratify the president's policies. I think what the American people need to be concerned about is that we're talking about changing the balance on the Supreme Court that's going to affect their rights. The women's right of choice, labor rights, worker rights, consumer rights. We need an independent Supreme Court that's going to protect your constitutional rights from the abuses of the president or Congress or corporate America. And that's on the line with this nominee.
Well, I actually agree with him 100%. His last, the second to last sentence
really
is absolutely true. We need an independent Supreme Court that's going to protect constitutional rights from the abuses of the president or Congress. True. But we also need an independent Supreme Court that's going to protect us from crazy, absolutely insane lower appeals courts who seem to want to legislate public policy from the bench and create law, even if it's in direct contravention of what is written in the frickin' code. The various blocks, for example, on Trump's travel ban, as in Trump v. Hawaii, that is an exact example what the Supreme Court needs to protect us from. If we don't like what Trump is doing, elect a different president. That is for us to do as citizens participating in our democratic process. Courts and judges are not an extension of a resistance movement. They're not. And as long as the policy of a sitting president, be he or she a Democrat or Republican or other, be he or she, or now I should say it, be somebody who is absolutely insane. Fine, I give you that premise. As long as the policy that is being forwarded by the executive branch, as long as it is constitutional, courts should not intervene. And conversely, if it's not constitutional, they ought to. Now, the extremist group that Ben Cardin is referring to is none other than the Federalist Society, the Federalist Society is most in line with the Constitution, an originalist view of the Constitution. And incidentally, the Federalist Society has taken Republicans to task. George Bush ran numerous times afoul of the Federalist Society. Republicans are no strangers in overstepping their constitutional authority. And the Federalist Society is consistent, unlike the ACLU, in maintaining its approach irrespective of the spectrum ideology of whoever is out there pushing forward a policy that might be in direct contravention of the Constitution. So they're a consistent group, far from an extremist organization. But this is how they want to frame this. And they want to frame it because they want to turn it into a soundbite that is going to get played over and over and over again, which is Trump is going to pick extreme judges, the sky will fall, women won't be able to get abortions, et cetera, et cetera. Now, there's something about that I want to mention. There's a concept in this in law in the Supreme Court called stare decisis. It means something that has already been decided. And the court is very reluctant to overturn previous decisions. Now, it certainly happens. I mean, there have been decisions that have certainly on review Korematsu being a good example. Korematsu got brought up quite a bit, where the Supreme Court allowed for the racially based internment of Japanese during World War II. And the Korematsu decision now is widely panned, and it's been overturned. In fact, in dealing with Trump's travel ban, the court was very specific in saying this is not Korematsu, and Korematsu is a terrible decision. So the court will overturn itself, but not. I'm just telling you, for all of this, all of you out there that think that Roe v. Wade is going to get canned, you're wrong. If anything, there might be more state rights issues allowed and states be allowed to decide how they regulate this. But it's, you know, trust me, in California here, abortion's not going anywhere. So good news is plenty of liberals will be aborted in the years to come. All right. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Marjowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Marjowski, Sam Nation Radio, the king of common sense in the house. Now, speaking of common sense and virtue signaling, folks, is when we are very concerned about sending the right message and are shaping everything that we do and say and probably even think to how it's going to look and how woke it is, how socially responsible it is. And the interesting thing is when big companies adjust to this, it happens all the time around us. And one of the most recent victims of this nonsense is Disneyland, Pirates of the Caribbean. Now, I have not been on the ride yet. I'm planning to go here. I've got a visitor from out of town, so I'm going to be headed to Disneyland. You guys know I love Disneyland. It's a happy place for me. And by the way, I hate crowds. I hate people in general. Lots of people in places, crowded places. I am not okay with that. And I still love Disneyland. Now, Disneyland, Pirates of the Caribbean has been a bit of a sore spot for the Disney company for a long time. Because when it opened all the way back in 67? Was that the year? Yes. When it opened in 67, I can't believe I remembered that. Well, we didn't have political correctness back then. You know what we had? We had fun. We had fun. And in the land of make-believe, right, in the land where we had pirates in the Caribbean, these pirates were men. They were mean. They threatened violence because last time I checked, that's what piracy is all about. And they had that, they had, the first thing that happened is they got rid of the pirates chasing the women. There's a scene in the burning town where you have the pirates chasing women, and they changed it to the women chasing the pirates, which, all right, I had to suspend a bit of disbelief there. But now they've done away with the bride auction. You remember, this is where they were selling women. And apparently in 2018... human trafficking is a bit of a non-starter when it comes for a giant company like Disney. But here is, buried in the story, something you must know. Okay. Remember how I said this is the piracy? The piracy is about guns. It's about violence. It's about it being a scary ride. In fact, I remember being on Pirates years ago. I was younger. And being terrified. I still remember being on the boat and thinking it was quasi-real. You know, I was like a sophomore in high school. No, just kidding. No, I remember being 10 on the ride and still being scared by it. Well, Disney designer Tony Baxter says about the changes, quote, "We don't want to put anyone in a Jeopardy role." Referring to the scene where these women are being exploited. The whole premise of the ride is that people are in a Jeopardy role. They're being attacked, plundered, murdered by pirates. That's what this is about. So my 10 cents on this is, I think you agree with me, is that in order to create the kind of safe world, the safe space world, we have to go totally vanilla. We have to make everything so bland and so unscary that it becomes unimaginative, it becomes unexciting, it becomes boring. We need to get a grip. We do. Everybody know the pirates aren't the good guys. Well, maybe that's where the Disney company kind of went astray when they made Johnny Depp all over the ride. Suddenly the pirates were the good guys. But the whole premise of the ride originally was the pirates were the bad guys and they do bad things. And in the end, they end up in jail and whatnot. So Oh, frustrating. Okay. I'm going to give you, when we come back, a very important segment. You do not want to miss this. I'm headed to San Francisco later this month. And everywhere I turn right now, and you've seen it too, are stories of San Francisco's poo problem and homeless problem and drug problem and crime problem. And this leaves many people confounded, because how is this beacon of liberalism that has enough money to make Solomon blush? How is it possible that they have this kind of manifest poverty everywhere? And the answer, my friends, is quite simple. The answer is because here they've allowed their ideology to exist virtually unchallenged. And this is the true fruit of what liberalism produces. So don't go anywhere. I'll explain everything to you when we come back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, coming to you loud and clear from our studios, located in an undisclosed place, deep behind the orange curtain. So, liberalism. Let me tell you, in general, and this is a broad concept here, my starting point on this discussion about San Francisco. Generally speaking, if you have a theory in respects is like a plan, right? You've got a theory, an economic theory, for example. You're going to do things a certain way. And generally speaking, liberalism, what it does is it takes money from those who have and redistributes it down in order to promote fairness. That is in broad strokes with liberalism. Now, liberals will say this is because we care and we love everybody. We're compassionate, unlike those evil fascist conservatives. But in the process of caring, in the process of redistributing money, taking money from the producers and moving that money around in a way that incentivizes, frankly, people who are not producing. Because remember, economics is all about production, right? It's production. And when you subsidize those who do not do anything, taking away from those that do, well, it creates problems. We know this as conservatives. Now, San Francisco, for years and years and years, I've been told, and I've remembered this in college and remember this even before in school, professors and teachers, down here, we fetishize San Francisco quite a bit. Look up to it. It's a beautiful place, shining city on a hill. And it also is a progressive utopia, and it has been for years. And it's given as an example of, see, this is liberalism working. Now, the fascinating thing to me is that it's not working. Well, that's not fascinating. Fascinating to me, it's not working, and people are not connecting the dots. And that's why you're listening, because I'm going to connect the dots for you. No one is connecting the dots truly between this terrible homeless epidemic that is happening in San Francisco. It's bigger than, like, the thing that we're dealing with down here with homeless people in the riverbeds. Like, this is nothing. San Francisco, the homeless problem is out of control. You have homeless people defecating on sidewalks. You have homeless people shooting up drugs in plain daylight, in right across from the Neiman Marcus store, which is a huge affront to liberals, because you're supposed to at least be able to shop at Neiman Marcus without seeing that kind of stuff. But their answer to this, their retort, their reply and response is more money, more public spending to help the problem. And I'm going to tell you right now, they've got it all wrong here. The entire approach to this is wrong. I read somewhere that Cisco donated, and Cisco's based up there in the Bay Area, they donated $100 million to help combat homelessness in San Francisco. And I thought to myself, okay, what's the city budget? What does the city have? What kind of a budget, annual budget in San Francisco? It's $10 billion with a B, billion dollars. San Francisco spends more money per citizen than any other municipality in the U.S., about $11,000, almost $12,000. The crazy thing is that when it comes to homelessness, when it comes to order, the biggest myth out there is that you can spend your way out of it. Liberals always think that that's what it is. The reason that they do this, of course, is because they want to grab the cash. Cash means power. Power means sustainability, political viability, and the furtherance of their idiocy. So they'll always want to go after the money. They always find excuses of reasons to tax you, to penalize you, to put money in their coffers. And the homeless issue is how they do it. Now, why has it gotten so bad? And the answer actually is a policing issue. You guys know the broken window theory, right? Now, this gets a lot of bad press, especially on the left, because, well, the theory is it was written by a series of criminologists all the way back in the early 80s. And then in the 90s, Bill Bratton, you remember him, he was a police commissioner, and him and Rudy Giuliani, he was the mayor of New York. New York was in bad shape, terrible shape. In fact, New York, look at some pictures, Google pictures of New York in the 70s and 80s. It is not the New York that you have experienced even today. And the reason for that is, I mean, crime everywhere, homelessness everywhere, trash everywhere, drugs everywhere. And what Bratton and Giuliani did is they recognized that if you allow petty crimes to occur, the idea of broken windows, which is, you know, vandalism and petty theft. If you allow little crimes to occur, you signal essentially to society that it's okay to break the law and that there's no accountability, which in turn leads to bigger and worse problems. So what you have right now in San Francisco is you have homeless people, for example, defecating. Now, it's not a crime to be homeless. But you know what? Last time I checked, there's got to be some law that says you cannot poo in public. There is. I'm pretty sure that if I, on my way to a meeting a client in San Francisco, and we have an office up there, if I was on my way to meet a client and said, you know what? I really need to go to the bathroom and drop my pants in the middle of Union Square, I probably would have a cop come up to me. But the reason that they don't do that and they don't enforce little ordinances with the homeless is because of sensitivities that they have. And I'll read you a quote. There's a great piece in, I believe it was the New York Times. No, the Los Angeles. No, New York Times. This was crazy. I'm getting to it. Here we go. Ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. I had it at the tips of my fingertips. All right, here we go. David Campos, who's a supervisor there in San Francisco, and he's one of the guys who's a big homeless advocate, said that law enforcement of petty crimes is, quote, a very knee-jerk kind of punitive approach that is ineffective and inconsistent with the values of San Francisco. Adding, quote, we are not going to criminalize people for being poor. That's it. So I'll tell you, the crazy thing that besides taxing people up the wazoo, collecting enormous amount of tax revenues, then paying for all these police officers and paying for judges and paying for miscellaneous law enforcement personnel, paying for the courts, paying for jails, paying for all of this. And the people who are taxpayers do not get the benefit of the cash that they fork over and turn over to their local government because somebody there at City Hall, not somebody, a series of somebodies at City Hall think that if you prosecute a poor person, you're basically picking on poor people. Lady Justice is blindfolded. Now, in San Francisco, she probably ought to get a nose plug, too. I mean, I could see not necessarily wanting to put these homeless people in your squad car. But the point is that you signal when you allow homeless people to defecate in public, when you allow them to shoot up drugs in the street, you're sending a signal to everyone. Yes, we have laws. Yes, they're on the books. No, we're not enforcing them. When we talk about the broken windows theory, San Francisco has a huge spike of car vandalisms. In fact, a number of times I've walked along the street, I've seen windows broken in cars, smash and grab, you know, people petty, you know, it's crime. Some of it is just pure vandalism, but a lot of times it's theft. Now, the crazy thing when it comes to that is there's an article here in The Atlantic. Now, The Atlantic is not a conservative publication, okay? The Atlantic is a fairly mainstream media little rag here that oftentimes picks on Trump and everything. Got it. But they did a story on this. Why can't San Francisco stop its epidemic of window smashing? This, I'll tell you why, because this is the price you pay for being woke. The price of being tolerant is you have to put up with crime. You tolerate people breaking the law for whatever asinine reason you have, you're going to have more crime. Look, I'm a dad, got three kids. My kids do things occasionally, very occasionally, that they're not supposed to do. If I let them do it, if I tell them, no, my expectations are that you not lie, but go ahead and lie to me. My expectations are that you're not going to hit other kids, but go ahead, hit other kids. What are my kids eventually going to do? They're going to lie. They're going to hit. They're going to be mean, nasty buggers that at 18, I'm going to let loose on the world. And everybody's going to come back to me saying, you're a crap father. Thanks a lot for dumping these three hooligans on us. No, I can't do that. And the parental role, I hate to say this, but law and order comes from consistent enforcement of reasonable and just laws. Anti-vagrancy measures. This is where, you know, I'm now going to lose every last liberal listening to me. Anti-vagrancy measures. No, public property doesn't mean you get to sleep on it. There are anti-vagrancy measures. Most municipalities, have them. It means you can't be somewhere. Public parks can be closed, for example. You can close them. A state beach, you know, they don't allow you to just camp out there. A courthouse, it's a public building, but they have a right to keep it safe, to close it in the evenings, to allow certain people and deny certain people entry. Now, you can't regulate public property based on some discriminatory criteria. You have to, if you're opening up to the public, you have to do it. There are constitutional norms that apply. But there is nothing wrong with telling people, no, you can't be on the street. You can't be on a main thoroughfare. Did you hear about the latest? Yeah, on the 3rd, this was right before the holiday. The tourist industry is really taking a beating because of this. So the tourism industry, something like $80 million a year. I got to make sure I get this right. It's an incredible, it's a staggering amount of money that it brings to the economy. But the tourism industry, they just lost a major medical convention. Well, I mean, okay, you don't live in San Francisco, but this is liberalism in action. It's a good question. Why are we talking about San Francisco? Because this is the most liberal city, arguably, in America, and it's going into the toilet, literally. It's been a place that has been given to us as a shining example of what liberalism can produce in terms of tolerance, harmony, peace, cleanliness, order. And it's anything but that. Well, what happens is people begin to, the class struggles are, that's another example of what happens in cities that are controlled by the left. Well, I'll get into the development part here in a minute, but it's staggering. Drug use, open drug use everywhere. You're not allowed to do it. There's laws against it, but the police don't go in to enforce the laws, and in part because they're told not to, and also because they're so afraid of getting scrutinized for any discriminatory practices that they're just not going to do it. One of these articles from the New York Times mentions how there's a crime that was reported. Guys break into a car. They're caught on video camera. They have the license plate to their car. And 18 months later, still zero arrests. No follow through. And I'll tell you, this is analogous, for example, to what is happening in Europe. In Europe, with a wave of migrants coming in from the Middle East, millions and millions of people entering Italy and Germany and other places, and with them, criminal offenses. Now, the state is very socially conscious, Germany and Italy among them. And so local police and federal police are not enforcing laws with respect to these migrants. And what is that creating? It is tearing. It is breaking the contract that the state has with its citizenry. The contract is very simple. You and I, we pay money to the state, to the sovereign is the technical term. And that sovereign could be our city, could be our state, could be the federal government, any of those three. But we pay money in taxes to each of them. And in turn, what do we expect back? Well, one of the things we expect is when we call the police show up. If our property is vandalized, we expect the vandal to be apprehended and to be punished. We expect to be able to walk from our homes or drive from our homes in relative safety. We understand that not every circumstance can be avoided, but we do expect to be protected. And this social contract goes back to the beginnings of time. This is feudalism. People gave up a lot of liberties to be safe. I think we need to watch. See, I can't wait to go. I'm going to bring you back a report. But I think that this is a story to watch. And every time you see one of these funny news stories about another homeless person that did X, Y, and Z, remember, it's not about homelessness. It's about crime. It's about justice. And it's really the fruits of a touchy-feely left-wing approach to a very simple problem. Which is, if you do the crime, be prepared to do the time. And that's it. Sam Rogowski back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Rogowski, DNC chairman Tom Perez was talking to Bill Press, who's a former DNC chair, on his radio show this Tuesday, and they were discussing the new, more than likely, right, she's going to be the congresswoman from New York, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And this is Press asking Perez. Press and Perez, I know two different people. Bill Press talking to Tom Perez about this. Listen to this.
Up in New York, where the fourth most powerful Democrat in the United States Congress was knocked out by a young woman, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, 28 years old, never ran for office before, big progressive, calls herself a Democratic Socialist. What's this tell you about where the Democratic Party's going today?
Well, I have three kids, two of whom are daughters. One just graduated college, one is in college, and they were both texting me about their excitement over Alexandria, because, you know, she represents the future of our party.
Ha! So great. My point is, after telling you everything that's bad with San Francisco and how it's been run by liberals in a total political monoculture, the Democrats as a party are doubling down on this. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is being called the future of the party by none other than the DNC chair. A democratic socialist. Socialism. Look at it. Well, we should become a sister country to Venezuela. I mean, in their minds, that would be a, you know, that would be nirvana. I like how Tom Perez answers the question. He gets asked by Bill Press, who represents the old white dudes of the Democratic Party. And the old white dude tells the hip, cool Latin guy, what do you think about this Ocasio-Cortez? And the hip new chair of the Democratic Party immediately begins to talk about what his idiot daughters think. Look, nobody gives a crap about what your daughter, they just graduated college. Their heads are filled with mush. They went to college, for Pete's sake. Tom, college. College, you know, the safe space place where you have emotional support animals during finals, where you, you know, can't, you know, freedom of speech is suspended for, you know, fear that it might blow somebody's mind to learn something that happened in history. Your daughters came out of college. I'm not even going to say it. You know what I mean. You come out of college brain dead. It's what happens after college when you finally get some sense knocked into you and you look at your W-2 three times and you're like, all right, I see what's up. You know, I've said this again and again and again about the blue wave that is supposedly coming. The too much is being invested by the Democratic Party in its youth. The youth is a very fickle group of voters. They are loud. They are on social media. They cry a lot. Boo hoo! Trump resist. But then they're too lazy to get an Uber and go to the polls. They don't vote. They talk about it. They agonize about it. But they're not doers because they're lazy and everything's been put in their mouth all their whole dang lives. But this Ocasio-Cortez being the future of the Democratic Party, bring it. Bring it. This is great news. Double down on failure. If that's the Democratic Party position, I am stoked because we got four more years of Trump coming up in 2020. Did you? Yeah, I saw that. Trump and you saw what Trump said about Elizabeth Warren. First of all, he said, if I were debating Pocahontas, that's what he calls Elizabeth Warren, I would pay her $1 million for a charity of her choice if she took a DNA test proving her Native American ancestry. He also said that he would have to throw the kid at her in a very delicate way because of the whole Me Too movement. Do you know what he's doing? The kidding aside, of course he's a troll, but do you know what Trump is doing? He's already thinking about who his opponents might be come 2020. And he's already diminishing them. It's very powerful. It's calculated. It's 100% calculated. And it's mind-blowingly effective. Trust me. Okay, Friday Funny. Oh, this is good. You're coming right up. You don't want to miss this. Stay tuned. Back right after this. Sam Rogowski on Sam Nation Radio.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very interesting. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Nation Friday Funny is here. Bridget Delaney writing for The Guardian newspaper. This used to be a credible publication once upon a time. The title of the piece, I stopped going to the gym because of Trump. Now I can't open jars. Yeah, I had to preface that this was from The Guardian and not The Onion, which is where this article belongs. Now, the writer of this piece, I looked her up. She could use some exercise, quite honestly. Now, she spends a good portion of her opening here fat-shaming Trump and saying that he doesn't really exercise when he claims that he walks around a lot. And that's all that he does for working out. But she talks about how she's going to this gym, right? She's an active person. I'm talking about the writer of this article. She's going to this gym. And the only person in her entire life, apparently, that has a brain. Well, that's not what I'm, that's my take on it. But the only person that she claims she knows at the time who is saying Trump will win is the owner of the gym. Of course, he's a small business guy. Probably the only small business person she knows. So anyway, this guy goes, Trump's going to win. You remember this happening during the election? You probably told people and they laughed at you and said, ha, ha, ha. And you go, no, I listened to Sam Nation. Trust me. I listened to the guy who says Trump's going to win. Well, anyway. He's telling her Trump's going to win. She goes, no way. And they make a bet. And they make a bet that she's going to pull one of these sleds with a lot of weight on it. This is something people do in those gyms where they put some bunch of weight on a sled and you have to pull it like an ox. No, I don't do that at the gym. Yeah, no, I take naps. But anyway, so this lady makes the bet, right? And they also, I think, bet $100. Well, here's what happens. Trump wins, and the next day she has to go to the gym. Now, I'm going to read to you the most hilarious bit of quote-unquote journalism I have read in a while. I didn't want Trump to win. He'd grabbed women by the meow meow and mocked a reporter's disability. He promised to build a wall and called Mexicans rapists. The thought of his presidency was frightening, but so was pulling the sled. What if I herniated a disc? After Trump claimed victory, I went up to the gym in a foul mood. Quote, just effing load up the effing sled, all right, and let's get this over with. I said this without much grace as I strapped a belt around my waist. I pulled the sled like a human oxen while being filmed, and the gym staff cheered. I did it, but the Trump victory soured my successful show of strength. Yeah, I could pull a pretend sled, but how was that going to help me when the world had been destroyed by nuclear weapons or climate change? I can't do this anymore. I'm getting you in the minds of a liberal idiot. So what does she do? She never goes back to the gym and she stops working out and she's fat now. She can't open a jar. So she claims. I don't know if it's really true, if she really goes and doesn't go back to the gym, but this is the type of insanity. This is what Trump derangement syndrome has brought. The Guardian. Didn't The Guardian break they've broken a lot of big stories. They did the Snowden. Yeah, Edward Snowden. Yeah, they broke that. And now they broke the story about a woman who can't open a jar because she stopped going to the gym because Trump won the election. Remember this. These people all still exist. And because of the entire Trump-Russia nonsense, hyped-up investigation, they all believe in their heart of hearts that the election was stolen from Hillary. They still, almost 2 years on, have no idea why Trump was elected. They have no interest in finding out why Trump voters voted for Trump. They have no interest in understanding the underlying political climate that created Trump. They just want to demonize him, cry about it, and say all will be well when Bob Mueller finishes with his investigation and are finally able to wipe this pest from the face of the planet. This is exactly why he's going to win again. They just need to keep all this stuff up, keep printing nonsense stories like this. We will keep laughing at them. And yeah, this definitely qualifies for Friday Funny. Back after this, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Sometimes I experience a few parenting fails. I live in a place of Irvine where there's a lot of nature. Well, certainly coyotes, that's nothing special, but we get mountain lions, we get deer, and other wildlife. And the other day we're cruising up the hill to get to our street, and I'm driving, and all of a sudden my headlights, right in front of my headlights, I see a giant snake, and it's curled up right between where my tires are. So I drive past it, and it's a narrow road. I can't turn around in the road, but I say, I saw a snake. I say that. I saw a snake. And the kids are in the backseat. This is July 4th. So, and it's dark out already. And I'm very excited about this. And Daniel says to me, I want to see it. Dad, I want to see the snake. And the girl's like, yeah, we want to see the snake. And my wife, she hates snakes. So she says, I don't want to see the snake. So, of course, what did I do? I got to the top of the street and turned around to go see the snake. Yeah, the kids won. The kids won that one. So I go back around and I slow down. I slow down. The snake was on the upside of the street. I'm going downstream, if you will. So I'm on the right-hand side. I pull over. I turn on the hazard lights. So it would be an unusual thing for somebody to stop there. Regardless, I roll down the windows. I said, look, kids, there's the snake. Well, right as I do that, some guy in a 4,500-pound Maserati drives up the hill at 50 miles an hour, and the snake turned into pate right in front of my kids' eyes. I can't even reproduce the sound, but it sounds like somebody, you know, with a spoonful of peanut butter in their mouth trying to pronounce the word onomatopoeia. And so kids, back away. And they were depressed about it. I mean, they just saw, you know, the snake ate it right there in front of my horrified kids. And Sherry was disgusted, and that was that. I had to drive to the bottom of the street. Now I had to drive to the bottom of the street, turn around, and drive past the snake in its present state. That was not a pretty thing to look at. Fourth of July, what did we do? I went to a party. I spent the whole day, most of the day outside in a park. Great neighborhood get together, a lot of people. We had a couple of great food trucks there, some barbecue. People brought desserts. There were no food permits for the dessert stand. This was a total renegade operation, a libertarian paradise on earth. It was great. I brought my puppies. My dogs came out, and they got so much attention the entire day that for the rest of the day, they just lay comatose at home. Thought they were dead. I mean, they're just laying on the ground, didn't move. They slept in, which they're not doing lately. So it was great. Ate a lot of food. Kids had a great time. And my mother, I'll tell you this story. Oh, my mother. So the kids have a parade. The kids have they go in with bikes and scooters and whatnot. And young kids are pulled in wagons and everything gets decorated, right? And there's a parade around the neighborhood. Well, my mom shows up on an adult scooter. I don't know how else to describe this. It's got these big wheels on it, and it's a scooter for adults. I think they make it in Europe. No, it's not a Rascal. It's got big inflatable tires, and it's pretty posh. I'm not going to lie. A high-end scooter. And my mom shows up with her own scooter, and the best part about it is she decorated it. And so my mom rode in the parade with my kids, and looked like she was having the time of her life. Yes, I got it on video, and it's spectacular. So there it is. Okay, don't go anywhere. A few more things to talk about, including the trade war with China. Supposedly that's on. I'll tell you what I think about that when we come back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Okay, trade war with China, apparently it is on like Donkey Kong. And much is being made by the mainstream media and all sorts of economists, pundits out there about how this is Armageddon. Now, I am a skeptic. I'm a skeptic of both sides. I don't know how this is going to turn out, but I'm going to tell you what I think right now, and we'll see how this develops. But I do have a knack for generally being right and having a good sense about things. So here's my word on this. We have been, when it comes to trade, especially with trade with China, we have been in an abusive relationship. This has been, okay, I understand companies get a lot of benefit from free, you know, cheaper goods from China, but it has been an abusive relationship. And China has benefited from this for years. Currency manipulation, where they peg their currency at a lower rate to the dollar and thereby stabilizing their currency, even though they have an economy that is continues to perform and perform well, where normally their currency would gain value, thereby making their goods more expensive. By keeping the currency artificially low, what does that do? Again, favors their exports coming to the United States. I've talked about this. I've traveled. I know what it's like. I know what it's like to be in Asia, to be in Europe, and to see American cars selling, and they're, you know, they're twice the money that they are over here. Okay, twice the money isn't because the cost of shipping them over. Twice the money is the tariffs and levies that are placed on them. And that's not fair, right? It's simple terms of equity. So what I think on this issue is the hype of this being devastating to both sides. I think it's overhyped. I think it's designed to make China blink, and I suspect that China will blink first. And I say this because China needs us more than we need them. If we are the abused spouse in this relationship, we've said enough. I'm leaving. I'm out of here, and these are my terms. And the funny thing about abusive husbands or wives, I don't want to leave anybody out, is that generally speaking, they're very codependent. And here, in very real terms, China is codependent on us more than they are on any other country. And I include in that the European Union as a whole, as one economic market. China needs us. The entire Chinese resurgence is based that we've witnessed in the 20th century, carried over into the 21st century, is based on exporting goods to the United States. They need us. And China is in the middle of one of the largest bubbles that is it's I'm telling you, the people that will blink here is China, the Communist Party, and their banks. They are going to blink because the Communist Party and its control on the Chinese, on Chinese culture and politics is based entirely on the perception that it is soundly run and that their economy is growing. I can't say any chink in the armor there on that. I can't say that. Any doubt cast. What are you laughing at? I didn't mean it that way. I was going to say it, and I can't say it. So I said it, but in a different context. Gosh. The Chinese communists can't risk any hiccups. They can't. We can do trade with Vietnam. We can do trade with India. We can do trade with other countries. Foxconn is building a plant in the United States. We have options, but the Chinese don't. We remain an important large market. And because China is also a large market, that makes what they are doing so much more so unfair, right? That means that what China is doing by limiting, by making American goods more expensive for Chinese consumers, it's making it difficult for us as a country to compete with those goods in what is the second largest market, maybe even larger market coming up now than our own domestic market here. So when it comes to free trade, I'm all for free trade. I'm not an isolationist, but I believe in fair trade. Zero tariffs one way doesn't mean 20% tariffs the other. That's not fair. And if this were in practical terms, you know, if this was you trading with a buddy, that you wouldn't think this was fair either. So let's bring it on. Let's see what happens. I think it's worth a bet, and I think the Chinese will blink. Okay. All right. I've offended everybody this hour. We're good? I'm probably in deep trouble. Will this get edited out? I don't know. We'll see. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation. Have a wonderful weekend. Safe weekend. Love you all. Talk to you next week. People.